Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 154th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include actor and director Stacy Keach. We'll be talking about the Zoom production of Vienna, which will be available on Sunday, November 28th. We'll also talk with Joy Mangano, have new episodes of USA's Smash, America's Big Deal. We'll also talk with Season 11 MasterChef champion Kelsey Murphy about her upcoming doings. We'll also talk with actor Michael Dvorzon. He's in the upcoming movie with Patrick Muldoon and Bruce Willis called Deadlock, which will be available in theaters, video on demand, and on demand coming up December 3rd. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and of course, share with your friends. Now, history was made on Friday when Kamala Harris became America's first female president. Sort of. President Biden underwent a colonoscopy, so he was put under anesthesia. And when that happens, the vice president is given full presidential power and becomes the acting president. Now, this happens regularly, and the VP doesn't literally become president, but it's still pretty historic that Harris became the first woman to assume the duties of the President of the United States. Oh, and it happened on International Men's Day, so suck it, patriarchy. Friend of the show, and got a brand new Zoom production of a movie that is coming out on Sunday. We're going to be talking about Vienna with actor and director Stacy Keach. And first off, Stacy, always great to visit with you, sir.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to visit with you as well and your listeners.
And Stacy, tell us how much Zoom has impacted your life over the last 2 years, and when did the idea for the theatrical productions and sharing those via Zoom, when did that first come to you?
Well, it came to me last year because of my dear wife, who's also the artistic director of Zoom productions. I had just Zoomed a production of King Lear for a charity in Pennsylvania, a church, and we thought, you know, since we're going to be locked up for a year, maybe we should do more of these. And so we did Cat on a Hot Tin Roof with Maxwell Caulfield, Juliet Mills, my daughter Carolina was in it, and then we did Huey, Eugene O'Neill's Huey. We did The Unexpected Man by Yasmina Reza. And then I had the great pleasure of working with Alfred Molina and David Story's Home, and Ed Harris and his wife Avery Madigan, and Lainey Robertson's The Gardener. And then I worked with, Barrymore, and this is our most recent production, which is going to be out this Sunday night, Vienna, about Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud, their relationship. And I had the great privilege of working with my longtime friend, Harris Yulin. We've been friends and collaborators for 50 years. I hate to admit my age, but there it is. And one of the reasons why we wanted to do it on Thanksgiving, because we're really grateful that we're still doing our thing. We're still able to work together. And it's also the first night of Hanukkah. And the relationship between Freud and Jung was colored by anti-Semitism, and one of the things that broke their bond was the fact that Freud thought that Jung was really anti-Semitic.
And
which I don't, you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah. And Stacy, how much have you learned from Zoom and in the production phase of things? And how excited are you to share that with the new production this weekend?
Well, it's a good question. Zoom is it's a unique hybrid. It's a little cross. It's a cross between live theater, television, film, and it has its own identity in terms of what you, as an actor, have to do. Because if you're scrolling a script while you're Zooming, you have to use one hand to do that, and another hand to do props, if you have props that you need, like a telephone or a glass of water or something like that. It's very difficult. And a lot of times when you're not on camera and you forget to unmute or mute, that's a whole other technique. So as an actor, it's very challenging. And but we've learned over the course of the last year how to deal with it. You know, and my wife, Malgosia, as the artistic director, has provided many colorful inserts, photographs of the history. So in a way, our Zoom productions are like dramatic documentaries, in a way, docudramas, the Zoomamentary, we could call them. Because we do point the fingers at people we talk about with photographs and videos.
And Stacy, with the amount of time that you've had in the industry, was something like this, did this maybe reinvigorate some of the acting passion, some of the creativity, if you will?
Absolutely, it does. It's very stimulating in that respect, and particularly in light of the fact that working with Harris, we had talked about the possibility of doing a two-hander. We went back to Lewis and Clark, or Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, and we talked about the possibility of Freud and Jung, and in doing that, we went back into, well, first of all, we had the great privilege of working with Jim McGrath, who wrote the script, and I've known for years. He was working on Mike Hammer with me, and he actually penned my one-man Hemingway show, Pamplona, and when I asked him if he would do this, he said, yeah, he'd love to. And of course, we're doing this as gratis, all as benefits to the Actors Fund of America. We're not getting paid for it, and we're happy to do that. And it's very enlightening and inspiring for us because we've had the opportunity to go back and learn about these two guys who were, you know, they were absolutely. I mean, they unraveled the mysteries of the psyche. They were the fathers of psychoanalysis. And they're fascinating people.
And Stacy, again, want to make sure and let folks know if they want to watch the Zoomamentary, would like to find more information, and again, the donations all benefiting the Actors Fund of America as well.
That's correct. It'll be on 7 p.m. your time, and www.stacykeatszoomtheater.com. StacyKeatsZoomTheater.com is where you can find it. And if you go there now, you can see a promo of the show.
All right. Well,
on that website.
Check
but
it out.
On the day, that's where it will premiere.
And again, that is on Thanksgiving Sunday, November 28th, is the Vienna Zoom Theater. It's StacyKeatsZoomTheater.com. Check him out there. And Stacy, always great to visit with you, sir. I wish you the best of Thanksgivings and hopefully look forward to talking again real soon.
And thank you, Cameron. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and your listeners.
If someone else is hosting Thanksgiving, don't do any of this stuff, because here are the things that only bad Thanksgiving guests do. First off, don't surprise the host with last-minute dietary requests. I mean, if you're allergic to nuts, let them know now, not the night before. Second, don't show up empty-handed or with a surprise dish. Even if it's not a potluck, ask if there's anything you can bring. Beer and wine are usually things that you can grab last minute. Just don't show up with a surprise side dish. You know, like your famous stuffing that'll put their stovetop to shame. Also, don't critique their cooking either. Third, don't expect oven space. If you're bringing something that needs to be heated up, let them know ahead of time. They might not have room, or you might not have access if they're still cooking the turkey. Fourth, don't arrive early or show up starving, because it's common for Thanksgiving to start a little later than planned. So don't show up early unless you're there to help. And don't be the jerk that says, "I'm really hungry, when are we gonna eat?" Fifth, don't overserve yourself. That includes putting too much on your plate so other people don't get any. But also, don't overserve yourself when it comes to alcohol. And sixth, don't overstay your welcome. Your host will probably have to wake up early to get everything done on time, so at some point, they will want you to leave. We're going to be talking about USA's America's Big Deal. It's the first live shoppable competition series, and we've got Joy Mangano with us today. And Joy, always great to visit with you, ma'am.
Yes, hello there. How are you?
I am doing well, and I'm excited to talk about, you guys got a special Thanksgiving episode coming up tomorrow.
Yes, we do. Well, this, you know, America's Big Deal has been a blockbuster show, and certainly on Thanksgiving, I suggest everybody have a fabulous meal and sit down and watch USA Network at 9 p.m. The show is going to be amazing. And, you know, after the year and a half that everybody has had, you know, the small businesses and entrepreneurs have really been hit hard. They represent over 90% of the firms in America, and they are the engine of America. So America's Big Deal, I said, we have to give them a boost, and it showcases these entrepreneurs and amazing products. You will sit there and say, I wish I invented that, or how did this not exist before? It just incredible. And by the way, we are so proud to say that those products will ship within days. So you're not going to wait, you know, whatever. You'll have them in time for the holidays. And we go across every category. And it really is very, very exciting. We never know what's going to happen each show.
And Joy, what was the inspiration behind America's Big Deal? Was it all about the small guys, if you will?
Giving a platform that never existed before in front of all of America, and USA Network couldn't be a better network, right? So, you know, it was to bring that, you know, that back, because what happens is the viewer, when we say live shoppable, the viewer watches, becomes a consumer, and is able to buy using the QR code or going to Shop America's Big Deal, buying instantly. And we are selling out all every show, and because these products are that good. So the viewer becomes the buyer, becomes the voter, so to speak. So the person, the entrepreneur that sells the most product, now gets to turn around to the retail titans, which consists of Lowe's, Macy's, and I'm on the panel, QVC and HSN I represent. And then we really have some heated competition to get that product that we know the consumer loves. And we represent, by the way, these three retailers represent over $120 billion of annual sales. So now we offer a six-figure dollar purchase order. Whoever one, the three of us bids the most gets that ability to bring them into retail with nationwide distribution. So this is an overnight phenomena for this entrepreneur and their product.
And Joy, what has maybe been the eye-opener of what folks had creatively over the last couple of years? Have you seen that their creativity has been bottled up, or has it maybe been allowed to expand a little bit?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, there's that moment in life, and I think a lot of people have been taking that moment in the last year and a half or so to say, what is my passion? Am I doing what I love to do? And a lot of these people left top executive jobs because they've been dabbling, you know, and doing, you know, creating their product, and decided to go after it full blown. And, or, you know, it's really amazing. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we had a 19-year-old young man win the competition with his product Tip Tough. His father was a chef, and what at 13, you know, his father came home and he'd have his hands would be cut and so on from chopping, and so he developed a product that you just, you know, put your hand in and it helps, and when you chop anything, you know, it helps, it protects your hands. We've had, you know, one of the top 10 chocolatiers in the world win last week. And, oh, let me tell you, his chocolate's second to none. So, you know, we go across every category, every age group, every people from every corner of this country have applied. And really, the best of the best. We had thousands of applications, and the best of the best are on. And, I mean, it just, I wish we could pick everybody and showcase everybody. But there's not enough time, you know?
That's right. And Joy, do you still get blown away by what the little guys are coming up with on their own without the help of major backing, if you will?
Yeah, you know what? That is such a great question. I just said last week, I said there was a product that I was talking about, and, you know, they pitched to us. And I'm thinking, how has a major company that's in this arena not come up with this product? So there, you know, make no mistake, that American dream, that American ingenuity is still out there in a big way. And, you know, you're talking to somebody personally that, you know, with a simple twist of a mop, you know, changed my whole career, and or a slim velvety hanger changed the whole industry. So, you know, so their great product comes from anywhere. You don't have to be building rocket ships. You know, a product that changes somebody's life and makes life better is as important as anything else. And I have to tell you, all these products are just that. And we are so excited. And especially Thanksgiving, we have a really, we're showcasing even more products. And it's really going to be so blockbuster. So I say, after your Thanksgiving meal, sit down, 9 p.m., watch USA Network, and you are going to be amazed.
That's right. And Joy, what do you think is the biggest misconception of the quote-unquote overnight success, if you will?
Yeah. So, you know, that I think people think that when something happens and you have success, and success, you know, here is overnight, literally, right? They think that that's like the lottery. That's like winning the lottery, but it's not that at all. With success comes, in all my experience in life comes, you work harder, you have to keep that up. It becomes a whole new level of different things, which is wonderful, right? But, you know, I think that as every year goes by and every product goes by, I work harder and harder to maintain that and to create that. And, you know, and I think that these people exemplify that. And so success is not where you just sit back and say, okay, I've made it. You have to really work to continue that.
That's right. And again, the new episode of America's Big Deal coming up this week. And Joy, always want to make sure and let folks know where they can find more info about the show. And of course, everything you've got going social media wise as well, my friend.
Yes. So they can go to shopamericasbigdeal.com.
That's awesome. Well, Joy, it is always great to visit with you. I wish you continued success, and thank you for paving the way for others to follow in your footsteps as well.
Oh, thank you, and we'll see you Thursday night.
Thanksgiving isn't exactly known for heaping portions of vegetables, and most of the veggies that do make it to the table are baked into casseroles, which isn't the healthiest preparation. Someone dug through Google Trends data to figure out which casseroles are popular in each state, and casseroles with greens are number one in 17 states. Those include various green bean and broccoli casserole recipes. Potato casseroles are the most popular in 11 states, corn casseroles are number one in 8 states, and 6 states pack their casseroles with squash and other veggies. 9 states had more unique casseroles. Pennsylvania and Maryland prefer leftover casserole. It's unclear if that's a normal casserole that just tastes better the next day, or a casserole made after Thanksgiving from leftovers. Connecticut loves breakfast casserole. Nebraska makes mac and cheese casserole. Virginia likes French toast casserole. And North Carolina is big on pineapple casserole, which is a southern thing. In addition to casseroles, a lot of people are Googling the weather for Thanksgiving, what restaurants are open on Thanksgiving, and festive Thanksgiving drinks like sangria and apple cider. You know me, you know I love to talk about some cooking, and we've got the MasterChef Season 11 champ, Kelsey Murphy, with us today. Kelsey, congratulations first off, and thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, how much of a whirlwind has it been since being crowned, and have you had a good night of sleep since?
I luckily have, but it's still surreal. I mean, it happened quite a while ago, and I still can't believe it, especially being a fan of the show myself. It seems so weird to now be the winner of the show. I still can't really wrap my head around that.
Kelsey, what is it that got you first interested in going on? I mean, how scary was it, and who gave you the ultimate push, if you will?
Yeah, so my father-in-law was the one that really sat me down and made me fill out the application to try out for the show. I had no interest at all, or really was not on my radar. And, you know, he being a fan of the show said, all right, we're doing this. You're meant for this. Let's go for it. And then, yeah, 6 months later, I was out on a plane out to LA. And, you know, even the night before I was petrified, you know, leaving my two kids and having my husband take care of everything. And there's a lot of the guilt that goes into that, just to be like, oh, I'm going to follow this dream and go on a reality TV show. it seems crazy. Luckily it paid off, but, you know, there's a lot of fear and a lot of just like faith going into it. Cause you just don't know what to expect. So, luckily it paid off.
Now, how scary was it each time you got in front of that box that you had to lift up, not knowing what was going to be the dish for the day?
Yeah, I really did not like that. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It's terrifying. I mean, any of those challenges really are, because you don't have preparation for it. You don't, you know, like have access to a cell phone to look up recipes or, you know, anything. You're just, you're just really put under the pressure, and you just have to trust that you're going to be able to produce something in an hour. There were many times where like the clock would start and I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know these flavors. I don't know what I'm going to do. And luckily it works out. You just have to like get started and trust your instincts. And every time it just kind of, you know, it pans out. You end up with something on the dish, at least.
And Kelsey, how much have you grown as a chef as well over your experience and your time in that kitchen as well?
Oh, exponentially. It's crazy. You know, before going on the show, I wasn't cooking five-star, you know, Michelin star dishes. I don't plate like that for my three kids at home, you know, like, but it really, you know, showed me what I was truly capable of. And really even coming back home, obviously for my family, I'm not cooking like the dishes that I made for, you know, Gordon and them on the show. But I have so much more kind of freedom and confidence in the kitchen to just like go in my pantry, go in my fridge and just cook whatever I have on hand, and make, you know, new and exciting dishes. And now I'm starting to do, you know, private events and stuff around where I live, and, you know, being able to kind of use those five-star dishes, in those meals and stuff. And it's just been so much fun. 'Cause I feel like I found my creativity and I really found my confidence in the kitchen.
Now, who was the biggest inspiration for you during the show? Was there anybody that kind of had your back on the set, if you will?
You know, that's a great question. Honestly, this sounds weird, but I feel like my fellow competitors really had my back. There were a few girls that, like, we, you know, all the girls specifically, we really were our own, you know, cheerleaders for each other. We all had such different, viewpoints on food, that we didn't really feel like we were competing against each other. It was just like, okay, every man for himself. And so we all really just like helped each other and cheered each other on. And when you're out there and you can't talk to your family and you can't, you know, talk to them, your competitors have to become not only your competitors, but your best friends. Because they're kind of your support system. And I was lucky enough to have a great group of people to really kind of help keep you grounded and cheer you on and bounce ideas off of. And it's kind of strange to say that, but that's how it worked out.
Now, after coming in, obviously you have a reverence for Gordon, for Aron, and for Joe. Which of those was the scariest during the show?
You know, Joe is definitely very scary. He's he doesn't like yell like Gordon does, but he just kind of like looks at you, you know, and doesn't say anything, and you know he's judging, which is almost scarier than someone yelling at you. And he's very like hard to get a compliment from. But I think I did so well in the competition is because I really, you know, backed away from feeling that fear from the judges and welcomed their comments and their feedback. And I asked questions over and over and over, trying to really get good advice from them. You know, they're the professionals. I'm the amateur. So I think that really helped me, because then I was able to not just hear yelling from them. I was able to kind of get the information I needed for my dishes.
So the feedback from Joe is kind of like you got from your parents. They're like, I'm not mad at you. I'm more disappointed in you. That's kind of exactly the face I see that he has.
That's the perfect way to put it. That's exactly Joe. It's tough. And you don't want to disappoint them. You know, it's just like your parents. You don't want to disappoint them. So that's definitely how I kind of like saw them.
And Kelsey, because of the show, how has 2022, how has the mindset going into a new year, how has that changed for you now?
Oh, gosh, it's exciting, because I've left my job as a physical therapist. I'm starting a whole new career, which is a little scary at, you know, 34 with 3 young kids and to just start a whole new career with no background in it. But I'm jumping head first and really, you know, trying to take the opportunity for what it is and, you know, just see what I can do with it. I loved being on camera, and I feel like I have a lot to offer in that space. So I'd like to continue to explore that, whether on TV or a podcast or YouTube, whatever that, you know, may be. And I'm just trying to just run with it. I think that's one of the things I learned on the show, is that you just have to take risks and, take it day by day and see what happens.
That's right. And again, Kelsey, I want to make sure if folks would like to keep up with everything that you've got going on, maybe where's the best place, website, social media, and all that as well.
Yes. Yeah. So right now, my Instagram is the best place, at Chef Kelsey Murphy. And then at the start of the new year, right at 2022, that's when kind of my whole brand will be launching. So, and everything's going to be under the name Chef Kelsey Murphy. So that's my website, chefkelseymurphy.com. My YouTube channel will be Chef Kelsey Murphy. So it's all consistent. So type in Chef Kelsey Murphy and you'll find me.
There you go. Well, Chef Kelsey Murphy, just to keep it in line, it's been great to visit with you today. Congratulations, and nothing but the best for you the rest of this year and into 2022 as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you guys having me on today.
Is this fun and clever or just weird? A 26-year-old in Canada named Katrina Furrows went on a first date with a guy last month, and before they went out, he went to and did her survey to make sure he planned a date that she'd actually enjoy. His name is Graham McCarthy, and he's 29. Questions included things like what she wanted to do, with options like dinner and a movie, hiking, or ice skating. She picked dinner and a movie. He also asked what kind of food she likes, if she had any dietary restrictions, what time she wanted to eat, and how, quote, fancy schmancy she wanted to get with it. Options on that ranged from very formal to basically pajamas, and she chose everyday casual. Once she took the survey, he texted her a formal invitation with details about the date, listing the restaurant and the movie they agreed to see. Then after the date, he sent her an optional exit survey so she could rate the date and rate him. Questions included how awkward or charming he was, and a jokey one that asked if she experienced any negative symptoms during the date, like nausea, butterflies, foot pain, and loss of taste or smell. Now, she didn't reveal all of her answers, but said that the date itself was lovely, and he must have done something right, because they're now dating.
You know him from several appearances. We've seen him on the screen. I'm looking forward to the new movie coming out December 3rd, available in theaters, VOD, and on demand, called Deadlock. We've got Michael DeVore on with us today. And first off, Michael, it's a privilege to visit with you, brother.
Thanks, Cameron. Thanks for having me. Hello, everybody.
Now, the new movie, Deadlock, if folks have not seen the trailer or the previews, I mean, how much fun was this one? It looks like it must have been a ball to make.
It was. It was a blast. I mean, nonstop action and a few poignant moments, that I think I was lucky enough to do those scenes, to try to make an impact on the moment and change the course of what was going to happen. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, from the day I showed up, first of all, working with a guy that I knew back in the 90s, I literally hadn't seen him in 15 years. And when I heard Patrick Muldoon was playing the lead role, I was like, this is just surreal. You know, I hadn't seen the guy. I had not talked to him in 15 years. And, I worked in production for Melrose Place for 3 seasons. So he was on the show for 1 season, and, you know, they become like family because you talk to them every day. You see them Monday through Friday, you know? And, so it was very surreal to be in Georgia and walk onto the set and Pat was there.
That's cool.
And when I said his name, he stopped and he said, I know that voice. Because, you know, I would call him, hey, Pat, your call time tomorrow is, you know, you do that enough times, you're just like, that voice. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun, you know, shooting some action scenes and some fight scenes and keeping the stakes pretty high.
Tell the listeners about Deadlock, the story behind it. Patrick Muldoon, Bruce Willis in the cast. I mean, how cool is that, too?
Oh, man, it's a dream come true. Yeah, I mean, to work with a legend like Bruce, I mean, a bona fide legend. Remember the first time I met him? It was at my friend's birthday party. Small group of people. And he was holding my friend's newborn baby, his first baby. And he was just standing there holding the baby. And I looked at him and I just said, the guy is so cool. Like, it's just, he's holding a baby and he looks like an action hero, you know, like, and, you know, I walked up and introduced myself and I said to him, how do you do it? Now, what I meant was, is, you know, how do you do, you know, what you do on screen, which is this just incredible work and this combination of like cool swagger and like charm. That's what I meant. But I said, how do you do it? And he thought I was talking about how do you hold babies? Cause he, and he looked at me and he says, a lot of practice. So I always remembered that one. But yeah, we had it was a dream come true to get to work with both of those guys. And also I did a lot of scenes with Matthew Marsden, who's an English actor, who's a great guy. We got along very well. And Jared Cohen, who's the director, who I've done a number of movies with. And, I think I forgot what the question was.
Give our listeners just an insight into the movie if they haven't seen the trailers.
Yeah. So guys, the movie is basically, if I was to sum it up in one sentence, I would say it's about a father's quest for revenge. And that father is played by Bruce Willis, you know, and on his quest for revenge, there is a lot of destruction. And I'm one of the characters that's on the other side of that quest for revenge. It's not particularly towards me, but I'm responsible for, you know, everybody that's involved on some level. So yeah, it's about a man's quest for revenge and what happens to him, you know, as the insanity unravels, you know, and as the consequences and the stakes get higher and higher.
We talked about Bruce being the bad guy, if you will, and Patrick being the star of the show as well. Tell our listeners just a little bit about how those characters kind of collide.
Yeah, so I thought it was really interesting because I think I'm not alone in this. Usually when you think of Bruce, you think of the hero, right?
Right.
And so the fact that he was going to be playing, you know, a menacing bad guy on a mission of revenge, you know, taking people out left and right, I thought, this is interesting. This is different. I'm sure he's probably done something like that, but mostly, you know, we think of him as the hero saving the day. So I thought that was particularly interesting. And Patrick plays a character that works on the plant that I'm in charge of. And he's an ex-army guy, you know, and he's well-trained, and he's kind of like the the hidden ace in the hole that they don't know that he's there that day. And so, he takes it upon himself to try to combat the evil that has flooded, you know, our workplace. And, you know, he's taking people out left and right on his way to the great face-off that will take place in the movie between Pat, you know, and Bruce, which pretty much, comes towards the end, is when they collide. Leading up to that point, it's his, what's going on with Bruce and what's going on with Patrick, and then the crescendo.
As you're on the set, whenever you get to see, how does the lead up to that work on set? I mean, I know you guys do recording different places, different times. How do you guys build up to that in your emotion as well?
Well, I'm in that scene. I'm in that last scene where they face off. And I have, you know, some stuff. You know, it's very much just one scene at a time, especially on a shoot like that, where we're moving quickly. There's not a lot of time to dilly-dally around. You don't necessarily know what you're going to be doing until the day before. So for me, it was about just studying the whole script, understanding the arc of the character, the arc of the story, and kind of trying to make some sense of it, and then being just flexible and ready and being like, okay, what are we doing today? Okay, got it. This scene, I'm just going to focus on this scene, and try to get through this scene. And as you do more and more scenes, then you kind of see how they go. But yeah, I had an idea, of the arc of the character, of the arc of the story, and kind of where things would fit in. I will tell you, just by mere sheer coincidence, that when Bruce arrived to the set, which of course, that's a different day. Okay, there's a vibe on the set when Bruce is not there. Then Bruce is arriving, it's suddenly everybody's insane. We're all freaked out. You know, he's coming, you know, but a calm, you know, freaked out. It's just the stakes are higher, right? Obviously, I mean, here we are, we're just kind of making our film, doing our thing. And now the big guy is coming here. It's like, and not only that, it's like, I'm going to be doing a scene with him too. Oh my God. What have I done to myself? No, you know, so just out of, sheer coincidence, the very first scene that Bruce shot on that movie, I got the call. They called me, Michael, we're doing scene, whatever, 121. And I'm thinking, I'm the first actor? Why me? I don't want to be the first actor. Send some other people in there, you know? So I'm not ashamed to say I was a bit nervous. You know, and that was a long walk from wardrobe to the set, knowing Bruce Willis was going to be up there waiting for me to do a set, to do a scene. But it was great. You know, it was great. He's very laid back. He's very chill, very humble. And once we got into it, I just tried to keep myself grounded. But I thought that was ironic that I was the very first. But to answer your question, how do you work up to the crescendo of that last the last scene where there's the face-off? I've read the script, I've seen where the scenes are going, I've seen what's happened, I've seen what is the damage, how high are the stakes right now, and then it's just about being in the moment. It's just, we rehearse the scene a few times, I know this is going to happen. And then I'm just going to see what happens. You know, I'm just going to try to stay present to the scene with these guys. And then when I have to do my part, I'm going to do it and try to have, you know, the stakes be high and it means something.
Now, Michael, you've been around the business for a while. How much different is shooting and prepping for a movie now that we've gone through these last couple of years? I mean, how much different is the whole arc of going from getting the script, the auditions and all that? How much different does it look these days?
Well, I would say with the pandemic and COVID, that is, you know, that radically changed in a lot of ways as far as the protocols that you have to go through, you know, in order to shoot a movie, with testing and on set testing and stuff like that. As far as how movies are being done, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, my experience the last 2 years, which has really been the best run of my career, you know, the last 2 years has been, you know, everything has been pretty consistent. It's been last second. it's been, Hey, what are you doing? There's a role. Are you available? Yeah. Okay. And then not in all cases, but you know, then you're on a plane. In this particular case, I was on a plane in less than 48 hours later to do the movie. So it's just about being flexible and time, you know, in movie making or TV time, the luxury of time. That's always the thing. If you have more time, you can take more time to shoot the picture, to focus on this scene, to focus on this day's work. If you don't have the luxury of time, then things move, you know, at a blistering pace. And when you're moving at a blistering pace, it's a skill set. You know, it's a skill set of being flexible, staying fluid, being open, being ready for anything at any time, being ready for a monologue to be written and handed to you and that you have to do it in, you know, in an hour. And so, you know, it's a wild ride. Yeah. It's a wild ride. So the difference, I mean, I don't know, because the movies I've been doing, they've all been pretty consistent as far as, we've had a lot to do and we've had to really stay focused and it's taken a team effort, and we haven't had the luxury of time to spend 2 days on, you know, two scenes. So
that's cool. That's cool. Now
I think the biggest thing has been, you know, the COVID restrictions that has majorly changed, you know, how we shoot films as far as not as far as how we execute the actual scenes and the shooting of the scenes, but the mask protocols, you leave your mask on until if you're an actor, right till you're ready to shoot. So we rehearse in our masks. And so that's the biggest thing that's changed.
Now, do you find it harder to get into character or stay into character because of all the protocols? Have they helped or hurt the cause, if you will?
Well, it's not comfortable to be indoors, let's say somewhere really hot or somewhere outdoors hot in a mask. Well, if we're outdoors and we might not have to wear the mask as much at the 6 feet, et cetera. But I'm fine with it either way. You know, it's an inside job. I do the work internally and it's easier to rehearse without a mask because you can kind of get a feel of what you're doing with the other actor or actress. And I think my experience and I've done since the pandemic, I think I've done five movies and it's been okay. We just adjust. We just stay flexible. Okay. This is the new protocol for now. And we just do it.
Now, how do you see the movie industry moving forward after all of this? I mean, I know we probably streaming went a little quicker than we all expected it to be available. How do you see that playing out in the years to come?
Yeah, I mean, this time that we spent all, you know, holed up in our places, it definitely accelerated the streaming platform if it wasn't already really accelerating at a rapid rate. Now it's really moved in and it's made a big move, and I don't think it's going to change. As far as theatrical releases and as far as how many theaters there are in the country, I think that's going to greatly diminish. I love to see movies in a theater, and but I just think humans were such creatures of habit, you know, and we start to create a new habit of watching movies at home. I mean, we've been doing that for a while already, but, you know, the balance of going to the theater and watching some at home. And now it's kind of like, I don't know. I wonder if it's going to be kind of, you know, I don't know if we need to go to the theater. And then you have to ask yourself, how many people are going to want to be going to theaters? You know, there's a demographic out there that's probably like, yeah, I'm not going to feel comfortable to go into a theater for a while. How long? So I think some theaters will survive. I hope a lot survive. I don't know how many will, but I think there will always be a place for people to go to the theater to have that experience. It's you know, it's an adventure, and the sound and the big screen. And I think it will always be around. But I think the streaming option is going to be accessible more than ever to see those movies that a lot of times would be in the theater and you wouldn't be able to get to see them until sometime down the road.
For you, what is, for you personally, has there been any particular binge that you partook in the last couple of years doing all of the streaming at home that you'll admit to?
When did I start watching? Gosh, I've watched some. See, I watched Afterlife, which is genius. Ricky Gervais, two seasons. And I just thought, this is the greatest thing ever. Please don't ever stop. So I definitely watched that. I don't think I saw too many movies, but I saw some other TV shows. I'm only thinking of stuff I saw recently, Nine Perfect Strangers, which is really one of the great shows I've seen in a long time. You know, I would put it up there with Breaking Bad and Ozark and Fargo season one. And, what else did I watch? I didn't do too much binge watching. I can tell you lately that I've seen some movies. One of my favorite movies out right now is called Coda. It's on Apple TV. It's a really powerful movie. It's a great story. What else have I seen? I saw that. I'm at a loss for words. Listen, that should go to show you that there's so much out there unless you take notes. Right? Unless you take notes of what you saw, and then you could just refer to your list and be like, I watched, you know, my parents watch a lot of shows. I guarantee you, if I called them and said, hey, what have you seen in the last year? My dad would be like, ask your mom.
I've gone to the old school. I've started streaming Cheers all the way from the beginning again. So that's where I'm at right now.
Really? Oh, speaking of Cheers. Now I didn't go hardcore into Cheers, but my favorite television show of all time happens to be based on a character that is in Cheers, and his name is Frasier.
I knew where you were going.
Greatest TV show of all time.
You and my wife agree with that one.
Greatest TV show of all time.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm glad. So I've been interested. I'm like, yeah. Someone asked me the other day, wasn't he on Cheers? And I said, yeah. And I'm like, why have I, if I'm this big of a fan, I would think I would have gone through that journey. So I think I'm going to follow your lead on that.
Okay. You will not be disappointed, I promise.
Okay, good.
Now, Michael, how long did it take you to get used to seeing yourself on the screen and feeling comfortable seeing yourself on the screen? Or has that ever occurred for you?
I suppose I'm getting more and more comfortable seeing myself on the screen. Historically, it was pretty difficult. And I would usually have a trash bag nearby to be puking in, you know, going, why did I do that? Why did I look that way? All this insanity. Lately it's been easier. I think, what makes it challenging as an actor watching yourself is that I am paying attention to details that perhaps not everybody or probably nobody is looking at. Maybe sometimes they are, but it's that looking at yourself through a magnifying glass at every gesture, every expression, every movement, the way you pick the phone up, the way I have to be careful not to get caught up in this whole thing of being perfect, because nobody's perfect. Humans are not perfect. People are not perfect. Why does the character need to be perfect and do everything like that? So that's the tricky part, is you want to be perfect. You want to hit you want to dot your I's and hit every mark and do everything exactly right. And if there's something that's a little off, or you make a decision or deliver a line that you don't like so much, then you think, God, I could have done it that way. I could have done it that way. But lately, and with this movie, ironically enough, which is the biggest break of my career, I don't know what that means, to be honest with you, Cameron. This could mean that I was horrible in the movie, because I was kind of going, I'm holding up okay. I'm doing okay. You know, so I either that's just watching myself more and more on screen over the last 2 years and kind of getting accustomed to it and having more confidence, you know, I don't know, but yeah, it's always, kind of a gut wrenching experience the first time.
That's
awesome.
That's like when you asked earlier if this was going to be audio only or video. I've had so many videos over the last year and a half doing this podcast, and I can't stand what that guy looks like on the screen looking back at me. So most of the videos have not made it up, just because I can't get past seeing myself on the screen. So they're just now starting to do that. My wife made me do it a couple of weeks ago, and so there we go. That's where we go.
Okay. That's funny. So you watch it back and you're like, look at me.
Yeah. I've gone back and tried to edit it.
They'll put me in a padded cell.
Yep. I go look at them. And finally my wife was like, you just need to stop looking at them. Just cut the beginning and the end off and just put it out there.
I really support your wife on this one. I think you're good on camera. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
We get these crazy ideas. See, this is the other thing is when I was a young actor, I used to pick my own pictures, right? I would shoot headshots with a photographer. I was young. I didn't know my ass from my eyebrows, but somehow I thought, I'm going to pick my own pictures. I don't know why. So I would always pick pictures that nobody else would pick. Now, why was that? The reason that was that I had an image of how I wanted to portray myself. I had an image of how I wanted to look. And so I was very stuck on that. However, what people see when I would walk in the room, or how people experience me, would be very different than this image that I'm thinking I need to portray myself to be, this cool guy who's, you know, all this stuff. So I would pick these shots. And after that happened enough times, I got to a certain point where I'm like, I don't pick my own shots at all. If you want my input, I'll give you my 2 cents, knowing that I'm probably wrong, you know, but you tell me what works. You know, I tell my agents, you tell me what works. I mean, I'll give you my 2 cents. But so that's my thing to actors is never pick your own shots, because we have this image of ourselves, and the Buddhists talk about it. We carry around this image of ourselves. And it may not be how people actually perceive and experience us.
Hadn't thought of it that way. That's good thoughts. Now, again, the movie is Deadlock. It's going to be in theaters, video on demand, all millions of different ways you can come and partake in that. And Michael, I want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with everything that you've got going on, maybe social media, website, any of that kind of stuff as well.
Guys, the best way to stay in touch with me is on Instagram. It's Michael DVZ, or you can just search my name. I'm also on Facebook and I'm on Twitter. I don't have a website. However, my good friend took my website and she says, once I get rich and famous, she's going to charge me a lot of money to buy back my website. So, until then, there is no website and social media.
Well, Michael, it has been great to visit with you today, sir. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule and look forward to the new movie and hopefully catching up again in the new year.
Cool. Thanks, Cameron. Really enjoyed this.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 154th episode in season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook at gqwithcam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can either visit our merchant store, where you can find hoodies, shirts, tumblers, mugs, stickers, backpacks, and more, gqwithcam.com/shop. You can also give a tip or a one-time donation if you'd rather at buymeacoffee.com/GQ with Cam. If you have a special guest idea, email me, Cameron@GQwithCam.com. We would like to say thanks to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your evening.